Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, an independent production which broadens the bounds of discourse and progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. Puerto Rico, for many people, it's just another tropical island in the Caribbean. But for others, it's an occupied homeland that has been ruled by one power or another for over 500 years. This week on Bruderhof Radio, a look at Puerto Rico and the movement for independence. In the early 16th century, Puerto Rico became a colony of Spain. What followed was typical of most Caribbean nations at that time. Foreign conquest resulted in the systematic elimination of the indigenous population, and the emergence of a colonial economy was based on imported African slave labor. Spain ruled Puerto Rico for several centuries, and weathered a number of violent insurrections before granting the island autonomy in 1897. But the island was not free for long. One year later, in 1898, the United States invaded during the Spanish-American War and, after defeating Spain, ceded Puerto Rico. From then on, many Puerto Ricans say, things got worse. Even as prices rose and American business conglomerates moved in, less work was available. And in the 1940s and 50s, many Puerto Ricans began to immigrate to the United States. There, they discovered a growing network of young Puerto Ricans working underground to improve conditions at home. Some of them, known as independentistas, demanded full autonomy for their island and took up arms to support their cause. Josefina Rodriguez is a mother and grandmother from Chicago who traveled from Puerto Rico in 1952. She describes some of the more violent actions carried out by Puerto Rican nationalists.
So in 1950, this young man whose name is Oscar Collazo, who passed away, by the way, Oscar Collazo and Griselio Torresola, another young Puerto Rican, thought that, you know, we have to do something for the whole world to know that we exist and that we are not lunatic, that we were not crazy, that it's the conditions that the United States impose on us that bring about what's going on in Puerto Rico and these insurrections and the struggles all over the place. So they went to the White House, and they were there to, they went to kill President Truman. Now that's a very drastic decision to make. But they went there, and they were there to kill him, to assassinate President Truman. And at that process, one of the security guards died. And Oscar Collazo was critically wounded, and Griselio Torresola died. Because they were shooting, you know, in front of the White House. And so Griselio died. And Oscar Collazo was critically wounded, and the United States gave him the death sentence. But the international opinion, and in Puerto Rico, people moved, and they commuted the sentence. And instead of putting him in the electric chair that they wanted to, they commuted the sentence and gave him life in prison, 99 years in prison. But the conditions continue in Puerto Rico. The people continue to struggle. And again, all this propaganda, you know, against the Puerto Ricans, it was very, very ugly. And another group of Puerto Ricans living in New York, one of them was from Puerto Rico, again said, well, we have to do more. And that's why they organized. Four people went to the U.S. Congress, and there were three men and women. The woman was Lolita Lebron, Rafael Cancel Miranda, Irving Flores, and Andres Figueroa Cordero, and went to the U.S. Congress, and I guess there was a shooting, and Lolita enarbolated the Puerto Rican flag inside the Congress and said, Que viva Puerto Rico libre. And then five congressmen were injured. I mean, it was something big. So they put them in prison. And can you imagine if one of those Congress people died, they were going to give them the electric chair, but none of them died, thanks to heaven. And they were put in prison, and they were tortured, and it was very, very difficult those years for Puerto Rican people over there in Puerto Rico and here, knowing that we have these people in prison, and they were being tortured, and all this like propaganda you heard about, and they were crazy, and they were not crazy. They are, you know, nowadays probably we think, you know, it's horrible to go to Congress and shoot at the Congress people. But they did it.
As these pro-independence activists went to prison, others took their place on the streets. Throughout the 60s and 70s, more acts of political dissent were carried out in the United States. Many of these took the form of structure bombings of federal buildings. Puerto Rican activists are quick to point out that these bombings were all scheduled at times when no lives would be endangered. But as the perpetrators of these bombings were arrested, many of them were charged with sedition, which resulted in long sentences, some over 90 years. Currently, over 15 nationalists are in federal prisons. Many Puerto Ricans consider them political prisoners or prisoners of war, and have built a strong support network to demand their release. The newest political prisoner is José Solís, a professor from the University of Puerto Rico. This summer, he was convicted of a 1992 bombing in Chicago. Luis Galarza, an activist from Chicago, thinks the federal government is targeting Puerto Rican leaders in an effort to stifle the nationalist movement.
You know, José Solís Jordán, the professor of the University of Puerto Rico that just been accused and sentenced for committing to putting bombs in a federal property place here in Chicago in 1992. You know, that's another of the lies, what they do to the leaders or the people that are speaking against the United States situation with Puerto Rico or against the invasion of United States. But because the invasion took place in 1898, but it's an invasion every day. It's not, you know. And I believe that that's the way they've been doing it for 100 years, 101 years now. They take the leaders away.
Despite the loss of a number of their most active independentistas, the Puerto Rican movement is still strong, as evidenced by a sizable demonstration outside the White House on July 24th. When we arrived on the scene, Marcos Villar, one of the movement's present leaders, was reading a list of all of the Puerto Rican men and women currently incarcerated in federal prisons.
A Edwin Cortés, vamos a liberar a Adolfo Matos, Alberto Rodríguez, Antonio Camacho Negrón,
presente.
Juan Segarra Palmer,
presente.
Ricardo Jiménez,
presente.
Carlos Alberto Torres,
presente.
Vamos a liberar.
Viva mi bandera, viva mi nación, viva mi bandera, viva mi nación, vivan los boricuas que son boricuas de corazón.
After a traditional rendering of the Puerto Rican national anthem, José López, a respected elder in Chicago's Puerto Rican community, spoke to the gathering about the historical relevance of the independence struggle. But López's comments were also directed at the White House.
At the same time, we're here to demand the release of the Puerto Rican political prisoners. Some people call them terrorists. We know they are not terrorists. We know that the people who have caused the problem of Puerto Rico is the U.S. government, the U.S. military, and the U.S. corporations. They are the real terrorists, because when you look at what they have done in Vieques, when you look at the fact that you have already kill a civilian on the island of Vieques and injure four people, and you did not see it in any of the newspapers in the United States, and that you had 100,000 Puerto Ricans come together on July 4th, and no mention is made in the U.S. press. It really speaks to the fact that Puerto Rico is a hidden colony, and Puerto Rican people, as far as the U.S. press is concerned, is a hidden struggle. But we're here to say that that struggle is not hidden, and that there are people wherever there are Puerto Ricans and people who support freedom and justice, our voices will be heard. And so we are here to demand the immediate release of the Puerto Rican political prisoners and prisoners of war. We have also come here to remind the United States that 101 years ago, on July 25th, to be exact, 1898, they invaded the island of Puerto Rico. And we're saying 101 years later, it's time that they leave us alone. It's time that Puerto Rico exercises its right of self-determination and independence. So we're here for these reasons. And we're asking all of you to take what we're doing very serious. We have with us people from different parts of the country. We know that you have come with the best intentions. But we also know that in Chicago, we had a person who worked in our midst, who lived in our midst, who was an FBI agent provocateur. This man, Rafael Marrero, is the man responsible for putting a bomb together. This man orchestrated a bombing in Chicago in 1992 and then blamed it on Jose Solis. And this man has the gall to go to Puerto Rico on January 28, 1997, wired with the FBI listening, and sets up Jose Solis. And today, Jose Solis is in prison because of the lies, of the innuendos, of the orchestration of the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which continues against the Puerto Rican independence movement and was started on August 2nd, 1960 and has not stopped. And in that process, dozens of Puerto Ricans have been killed, like Angel Rodriguez Cristobal, who was killed fighting for Vieques in a prison in Tallahassee, Florida. And we have the example also on July 25th, 1978, of two young Puerto Ricans who were also set up by the FBI and the Puerto Rican police and killed at Cerro Maravilla. We have a long history of repression, but we have an equally long history of resistance.
Freedom now!
Freedom now!
Freedom now!
Freedom now!
Among the crowd of several hundred protesters marching on the White House sidewalk were a group of middle school students from the Bruderhof communities in upstate New York. For the last 2 years, these students have been corresponding with the Puerto Rican freedom fighters held in federal prisons. But rather than becoming involved in the politics of Puerto Rican independence and self-determination, these kids support the Puerto Ricans as human beings and demand fair and humane treatment of the political prisoners. Arlo Meyer is 12 years old.
Hi, my name is Arlo Meyer, and I am writing to one of the 16 Puerto Rican political prisoners who are in prison for fighting for justice for the Puerto Rican people. And I am writing to a prisoner called Adolfo Matos, and he has 87 years for seditious conspiracy and other charges. About 2 years ago, we started writing to the prisoners just to help keep them going in these our country's prisons, and so that they don't just give up in there. And so they feel that someone recognizes them as a human, because the way they're treated in there is basically like animals caged up in little cages.
You're listening to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program aired across the United States and Canada. If you have comments about today's program, give us a call at 914-658-8351 or visit our website on www.freespeech.org. Outside the White House, the Bruderhof students performed a number of songs in support of human rights, peace, and an end to injustice. But the day of protest did not go without incident. In a move apparently planned before the march, 18 of the demonstrators knelt down on the sidewalk and were arrested. On a certain portion of the street outside the White House, remaining stationary is illegal because of a supposed security threat to the president. Those arrested said their action, although largely symbolic, indicates their solidarity with the Puerto Rican political prisoners.
This is a civil disobedience in front of the White House. I'm here calling for the release of all Puerto Rican political prisoners, and it's time to bring them home.
I'm here because I believe that it's time now that our political prisoners be released, and also that the Navy get out of Vieques.
Yes, we are here in protest to get our release and the freedom of our political prisoners and prisoners of war. Other people in this country who have killed, murdered, raped, obstructed justice in worse order have been imprisoned for lesser terms than our political prisoners, which have gotten sentences from over 20 years to over 100 years. If you think about that, America has the worst record when it comes to political prisoners in the whole world in terms of sentences. We are saying that it is time for them to come home, and it's time that the American government pardon these people. Freedom now for our political prisoners and prisoners of war, Puerto Rican.
Oh, it's time to let them go. It is so long past time for them to come home.
Libertad! Libertad!
We're here to liberate the Puerto Rican political prisoners. It's a crime. President Clinton is a criminal to keep them in jail. He's a criminal if he keeps them one more day in jail. That's why we're here, to say that.
In addition to Puerto Ricans, other anti-imperialist movements were present outside the White House. One New York activist, Bob Lederer, says he served 3 months in federal prison for his refusal to testify against a group that bombed the headquarters of several U.S.-based multinational corporations. According to Lederer, these were companies that exploited the people and natural resources of Central America. He spoke with Bruderhof Radio reporter Pete Weeks in Washington.
I was one of six white leftist activists who were subpoenaed to give testimony to a federal grand jury investigating an underground movement that was carrying out resistance to U.S. war crimes in Central America, the Middle East, and Puerto Rico, U.S. violations of international law. And they had been involved in bombing federal buildings and corporate headquarters that were implicated in these crimes. And all six of us refused to cooperate, refused to testify, and as a result, we were held in contempt of court and jailed for the remaining time the grand jury ran, which in my case was 3 months, which I served in federal prison.
Can you tell us a bit about why these people were carrying out bombings against the U.S.?
People may recall that in the 1980s, the U.S. was waging overt war against Nicaragua through the CIA, for which it was held accountable by the World Court and held to be violating international law. The U.S. was arming and directly running pilot missions against the people of El Salvador, fighting through the Fardabon do Marti National Liberation Front, and elsewhere throughout Central America, and in fact in many parts of the world, as well as, of course, the continuing colonization of Puerto Rico. And so there were these activist groups. Some of us were acting legally and, you know, through protests like we see here today, and others were acting through underground resistance by bombing federal buildings in order to send a message to the public and the government that this was an intolerable criminal act, or set of criminal acts that the U.S. was engaged in, and that people need to loudly resist it.
How did you get involved in the work that you're doing today? And
well, it's been a long process of raising my consciousness that came out of the Black Power movement in the 60s, which I saw very active around me as a teenager and was moved by, but didn't understand until I took a course in college on racism. And that was taught by extremely strong and knowledgeable black activists and academics who opened my eyes to the institutionalized nature of racism and how it affected not only African Americans, but also Puerto Ricans, Chicanos in the Southwest, Native Americans. And I gradually came to understand and be encouraged by activists who were very dedicated to ongoing anti-imperialist work in the idea that as white people, we have a special responsibility to stand up against the racism of our government and at all levels of society.
What were the direct consequences of your resistance of the grand jury?
I was held in civil contempt and sent to a federal minimum security prison for 3 months.
And would you do it again?
Well, absolutely. To me, it's just an article of faith that if you're an activist for social change in the United States and a government agency comes calling, demanding that you give up information on the people you work with, that you have to take a stand on principle and say, no, I'm not going to be an informer, especially for this government, which is so repressive and is only trying to dismantle and destroy movements for justice.
Before the street rally, supporters of Puerto Rico lobbied members of Congress for help in releasing their compatriots. One of the lobbyists described the effort.
And we visited these 60 legislators. About 10 of them were senators, and about 50 of them were congresspeople. We visited some of them to thank them for the work that they have done, because some of them have written letters to President Clinton asking for the release of the prisoners. And we went there to thank them, because these people got to be aware that we are a grateful people, and when somebody helps us out, we're gracious, and we're going to go and let them know that they've done it for us. And we asked them also, at this time, at this critical moment, in addition to having written the letter, they can give us a call to President Clinton. They can put in a call to Charles Roth, for one of the people there in the White House. And it was a really interesting experience. The group that went there, maybe 40 of us, was composed primarily of young people. The youngest ones were maybe like 17 or 18 years old. And the less younger ones of us, there was one or two of them that were as young as 65 years old. Or maybe not that old. 55. There was one of the 13-year-old was the youngest. The 13-year-old was the youngest. But it was a very young group is what I'm saying. And I think it was a big impact for the congresspeople and the senators to receive these young people, eloquent, intelligent, from the neighborhoods, coming in and expressing their opinions and the reasons why these people have to be out of jail, and they have to be out of jail now. So it was an incredible experience, and I know that the group from Camden in New Jersey already got the commitment of one more letter from Congress, from one of the Congress people from New York, and we got to give the people from Camden, New Jersey a big hand. And I tell you, from the visits that I participated in, it was amazing how well received the message was. How aware some of these people were of the situation of Puerto Rico and the situation of the political prisoners. And I have a strong feeling, although we didn't get a commitment like the people in New Jersey did, I have a strong feeling that after a few phone calls, we will be getting 5 or 6 more letters from Congress people and possibly 3 or 4 from a couple of these senators.
Alfonso Ramon, chairman of the Interfaith Committee for the Independence of Puerto Rico, visited the White House before the rally and spoke with presidential advisors regarding the situation. A request to release and pardon the political prisoners has been before President Clinton since 1992. But Ramon, for one, came away from the meetings disheartened by the minimal effort put forth by the administration.
My impression after the meeting that we had with those two individuals from the White House today is that there's not much that we really can do to expedite that process. My sense is that they have already done all the investigations that they wanted to do. They are very aware of all the issues, of all the emotional implications, all the sentiments that the Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico or in the United States have about that issue, how important it is for all of us. They have that information. For me, the problem is that there are some political issues that are very difficult for the president's people to address. And one is the fact that there are 15 political prisoners, and to make the public aware of that reality, that there has been these political prisoners for more than 20 years in prisons, when they have been saying, no, we don't have that, that's a political issue, very difficult for them. So I feel that we will have to continue waiting for that political decision, or then put pressures in another way to those who are controlling those decisions.
But other supporters had more hope. Jan Sussler, an attorney for the political prisoners, also attended the White House meeting. She claims she received a verbal promise from one presidential advisor stating the prisoners would be freed soon. But even if the independentistas are never released, the struggle is sure to continue outside the prison walls.
My name's Jan Sussler. I'm the attorney for the Puerto Rican political prisoners, and my law office is in Chicago, Illinois. We were in a meeting today with representatives of the White House, the Interagency Working Group on Puerto Rico, and the White House Counsel's Office. There were a group of about 18 of us from Puerto Rico, from the United States, all over the United States, Chicago, New York, New Jersey, all over, coming really to find out why has the administration taken 6 years to decide whether it's going to let these 15 men and women out of jail. And it was a wonderful delegation comprised of religious people from the Methodist Church, a Catholic bishop, Bishop Gumbleton, the United Church of Christ, the Episcopal Church, and Councilman Jose Rivera from New York, and family members of the prisoners and other civic leaders. I mean, it was really a wonderful grouping of people, and a grouping of people who really were impatient and I would say even angry. And you know, we were talking really about our thoughts and feelings about how terribly long this is, how hard it is on the families, and how there is no question in the minds of people in Puerto Rico, in the United States and Puerto Rico, and the churches and human rights groups, that these men and women are being held unjustly, and it's time to bring them home. One woman who's a professor, she got very upset, and she said, I am not satisfied with your answers. You ask us to be patient and to work within your democratic system. Well, let me tell you, your democracy is not working for us. I am not satisfied, and it is not working. And, of course, the president's representatives were very, I think they expected, actually, the reaction, because we are in touch with them on a regular basis, and they know people are impatient. They see the demonstrations. They see the letter upon letter of support in the newspaper articles. And they really said, we wish it weren't taking this long. We wish that we could tell you what the answer is, but we aren't the ones that make the answer. The president makes the answer. And we hope that it won't be much longer. The process has taken much longer than we ever thought it would, and we think we're nearing the end of the process. We can tell you that. We can't give you a date. We can tell you, he said, that next summer, if you want to come to Washington, it won't have to be for a meeting with us. It can be to be a tourist.
That's all for this edition of Bruderhof Radio, a look at the struggle for Puerto Rican independence. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman and Ben Wright, with additional reporting by Pete Weeks. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love, love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and a refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information about Bruderhof Radio, give us a call at 914-658-8351.